Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Our guest today is James Merriman, Chief Executive Officer of the New York City Charter School Center. Merriman has served in that role since 2007 and lots of others before it. James Merriman, thank you and welcome back to the program so we can get a State of the Charter Schools report.
Thanks, Alan. Glad to be here.
So first of all, how is the charter school movement? Is it healthy? I heard something the other day from one of your sponsors, the Riches, who said that in New York State, a lot of people think almost half the schools are charter schools, but it's only 3%. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. There are 208 charter schools as of this year in New York State. 159 are in New York City. 24 opened in New York City this year and 3 upstate. So it has become more of a New York City-centric movement than I think it was in the past. In a word, I'd say, you know, I think the sector is healthy. I also think it's growing, and it's growing because parents are voting with their feet and continue to seek charter schools as an alternative.
Now, one of the things that I found attractive about charter schools in the beginning, and still do, is that the people who went to public school could adopt from charter schools and demand that the other public schools, because we want to make it clear charter schools are public schools, but that the other public schools could learn from the charter schools. Is that happening?
It is happening, and I think it's happening in ways that people don't really understand. There are dozens of district schools here in New York City that I think most people would describe as charter-like. And they've adopted a lot of the kind of techniques that charters use. And that, frankly, you know, some of those techniques came from high-performing district schools before charters were even around. So it's a complicated interplay between the two sectors, but there are schools out there that are not charter that have adopted this sense that, you know, every day, everyone in the school building has to wake up and be on the same path of thinking, how do we get kids into college? And that's a cultural thing, right? It's hard to define. But when you go into a school building that has that, you know it. And number two, I'd say most of the leaders in those schools will say, yep, we've learned things from the charter sector. But equally, there are things that the charter sector is learning from the district as well.
So is there dissonance still between the unions in New York, the education unions, and the charter schools?
I can speak more to the UFT than NYSET, you know, and while I don't want to put words in their mouth, I think their view is that, yes, charter schools are here to stay. I think they've been very public in speaking to their membership and saying that, look, you know, anyone who thinks that charter schools are going to go away is living in a, you know, in a kind of dream. That's not going to happen. And so I think the union is more focused not on trying to eliminate charters, but on figuring out, you know, where they stand and also thinking about what are the rules of competition between the two sectors, and equally making sure that both sectors have the resources they need to do the job.
What did you mean by that, James? I'm so sorry. What did you mean by that, James, the rules of competition?
Well, I think their focus has been on whether, you know, the number of students that charters are serving that everyone, I think, would describe as those students who are most at risk and hardest to serve historically. And those are the poorest of the poor students, English language learners, and students with disabilities who receive special education services. And as you may remember, when the cap was lifted in 2010,
Let me just interrupt and say the cap, because there are some people who don't know what we're talking about.
Sure.
The cap on charter, how many charter schools there could be.
Exactly, and it was lifted from 200 to 460, and this was part of New York State's Race to the Top application under President Obama, which we won. And one of the requirements was that charters serve comparable numbers of English language learners, special education students, and students who are eligible for free and reduced price lunch, poor students. So that was an issue that was out there. It's being addressed. Charters are increasing the numbers of the students that they're serving and figuring out, you know, our data shows ways to serve those students better. We're getting good outcomes with English language learners and special ed students.
Well, when you say special ed students, I think that's a big one. I was talking to somebody from the charter school who said that some of the charter schools are actually counseling parents of children with disabilities out of coming to a charter school. Is that true?
I wouldn't say that it has never happened. I'm sure it has. I don't think it's the norm, however, and I've seen no evidence. There's been lots of accusations, but I've never seen evidence to show that that's true. And what I'd say is we are seeing more and more schools that, in fact, are now opening up. We have six this year in New York City that are specifically created to serve those students who have disabilities or students who have been involved with the juvenile justice system. So the sector as a whole is addressing these complaints. I'd also like to point out, because I think this is critically important, right, that, you know, if you ask people how well districts have served special ed students, the answer they'll tell you is they enroll every one of them, but, you know, their record of educating them is really rather awful across the board, certainly here in New York City, and it's why New York City is now engaged in a whole reform under which they're trying to make sure that every school serves those students.
Let me go back to unions for a minute, James Merriman, and ask
Sure.
you this. There are some charter schools that are unionized. There are some that are not. Are they all fair game? In other words, if somebody came in, if the union came in and said, we want to organize your people, would they be able to do that?
They would. They have the absolute legal right, and every employee in a charter school has the absolute legal right to seek to organize and to pick the union that they'd like to organize with. And there have been a number of schools that have organized. But equally, there have been a lot of schools, apparently, where there doesn't seem to be much interest at all in having a union. And I think, you know, that's one of the little understood things about charters. We certainly understand that charters provide choice for parents and students. But equally, I think it's important that charters provide choice for teachers, right? So teachers have a variety of environments in which they can work, union, non-union, more teacher-led, more hierarchical. And the notion that there should be one way in which a mm-hmm. teacher can work, I think is just antiquated.
Mm-hmm. We recently interviewed Eva Moskowitz on this station. She has done something that some people wonder about, which is to open charter schools in more affluent areas rather than the more traditional areas where, you know, students are underserved. Her answer, of course, is people deserve choices wherever they are. What do you think?
Her answer is my answer. I think that people do deserve choices wherever they are. And the fact is, of course, the middle class has always had choices simply by dint of either, you know, moving into a district or a neighborhood that has a school that fits their idea of what a school should be for their kid. So providing choice for middle-class parents isn't really new, though providing it in a charter setting is. You know, my organization in particular, we're really more focused on providing more good seats for kids in poverty who historically haven't had choice. But when I see the level of animosity directed at someone who simply wants to provide another public school, you got to believe that something other than school and what's good for kids is going on.
You know, it's very interesting that we get into this. I hadn't planned to, but, you know, there are many districts, including mine in Great Barrington, which taxpayers support, the very good school system in Massachusetts that I live in. And then when somebody wants to open up a charter school in the region, they say this is just going to divert funds from our very good schools. How do we answer that?
Look, I think when you have a school system, a district that on the numbers seems to be working for most or all of the kids, I think the bar goes up for anyone wanting to start another school in that district. Do I think they should be prohibited? I don't. But I think they have a very high bar to show why another school should be created. Personally, you know, having a school simply because you want more art or Mandarin or a more green emphasis, to me, that wouldn't meet the bar, in my view. But, you know, other people differ on that.
We are talking to James Merriman, and he is the executive officer, the chief executive officer of the New York City Charter School Center, which is an amalgam of and serves all of the charter schools as they make their way in a difficult political situation. Let me ask you this. We know that the way that the charter schools got started in New York State is because of George Pataki. He made a very good deal with the state legislature in order to get that going. But and Michael Bloomberg was certainly for it. And Joel Klein, who worked for Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, Joel Klein, who was his chief education officer, did. Now it looks like we're going back to some of the old model in which Republicans will be scarce. The people running for mayor don't have a Bloomberg. What does this portend for the charter school movement?
Well, I think it's important to remember that over the last few years, support for charter schools, certainly nationally, has been bipartisan.
That's true.
If we remember the debate, the debates between McCain and Obama, it seemed that charter schools were about the only thing they could agree on, other than that they disliked each other. I'd say in New York City, there are obviously politicians who feel that supporting charters is tantamount to supporting some sort of privatization of the system. I think all the mayoral candidates in New York City understand that choice is here to stay. I would even say that they fundamentally agree that a parent has a right to try to find a good school for their child in the same way that they try to find good schools for their children. So while it's scary in some respects to lose the kind of champion that we have in Mayor Bloomberg, my sense is that any mayor that is going to be mayor of this city is going to want to have charters as part of an overall system of reform for education. It's just too big a problem to try to leave out any part of the solution, and charters are clearly part of the solution.
Talk to us about something cool, and explain it to our audience, about co-location. What does that mean?
Co-location is when you have two schools in a single building.
And sometimes it's three schools, right?
I should have said two or more schools in a single building. And in New York City, co-location has been something that's been practiced, you know, for a long time and predates charters. In New York City, we have hundreds of schools co-located in the same buildings. Now, what has been sometimes more controversial has been that Mayor Bloomberg looked around and Chancellor Klein and said, you know what, charters are serving residents of this city. And when students go to a charter school, they don't become somehow alien. So given that charters don't get facility funding from the state, we're going to give them space in our school buildings where there's space available. So that's co-location.
Has there ever been dissonance? I mean, I remember when this whole concept came up, there were people in the other public schools who would say, you're going to have all this stuff for the charter school kids. It's going to make us look bad, or it's going to turn off some of the parents. Has that turned out to be true?
I think in the vast majority of cases, charter schools and district schools, you know, there have been controversies and there's been fights about siting. And
who gets to use the auditorium?
Who gets to use the auditorium, whether a school should go in there in the first place. So, but at the end of the day, when the cameras go away, what you have are principals and teachers, I think, who in the vast majority of cases recognize that they have a shared responsibility for the students in the building, that fighting over space is something that they need to not do, but instead find ways to work together. Look, co-location isn't easy. I don't think charter schools and district schools, ideally, you know, they'd love to be in their own buildings and completely be able to use the auditorium when they want to. It's hard to share. But you know what? In the majority of cases here in New York, schools have managed to find a way to live together, whether they're district schools together or charter and district schools.
You mentioned earlier, James, that most of the charter schools that we have are in the city. I wonder why that is. Why aren't other localities accepting charter schools or developing charter schools?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether it's a question of acceptance so much as, you know, no charter exists unless you have a group that comes together and wants to start that school. Now, I do think, obviously, the mayor's willingness to provide space in public school buildings has been a huge boon to groups, because the fact is, without facility funding, without any state aid whatsoever, charters really have a hard time getting started, right? I mean, no school can survive without a building. So I also think, though, there is in New York City a long history of reform. Before charters, there were small schools and alternative schools. And I just think you have a kind of social and cultural acceptance that there are going to be lots of different ways to do public school. And that's a more alien concept than in other cities, I think.
Teacher evaluations. You know, there's been a huge controversy over how teachers should be evaluated. Have the charter schools worked that out?
I mean, you know, whenever one says, have charter schools done X or Y, you always have to remember each one of them is different and has probably done things in a different way. What I think charters have figured out is that the best way to evaluate teachers is to do it in a way that works for that building. Now, that's the luxury of having independent and autonomous schools. The governor, you know, does not have that luxury in trying to create a system statewide. And what I'd say is this, that frankly, the reason that we had a reform of teacher evaluation is because everyone, union, management, school districts, you know, policymakers, all agreed that the way teacher evaluation was being done was horrific. And there's been an attempt to improve it. But ultimately, centralized approaches like that are second best, in my view, to having a strong school leader with a strong relationship with his or her staff.
So how can we compare apples to oranges? In other words, one of the reasons we have charter schools is they wanted to do better than, as you say, the district schools do. Do we test? Do we evaluate? How can we say, okay, a charter school's no good, deserves to be closed up? You've done it, others have done it, you know, in terms of insisting on that. What are indices that we use?
So, you know, to be blunt, it's outcomes for children, and those outcomes are measured by test scores. Now, you get a lot of rhetoric about how you can't measure, test scores don't really measure success. But the fact is that testing is a fact of life. Students are required to take tests to get into college, and they do provide a generally good picture of how students are performing. Now, I think everyone agrees that we need to be careful about measuring the growth and the value add of the school itself and separating that out from where the students come in at. And that's a difficult area, but just because it's difficult doesn't mean that we don't need to try to figure out the best way possible to do it. The alternative is simply to say there is no way to judge the efficacy of a school, and as a result, go back to a world in which there is no accountability whatsoever for results. And to me, that is not an acceptable alternative.
I've been told that you guys have come up with a transparency plan for charter schools, that you've issuing a report, you're working on it, the good, bad, and the ugly. What's the ugly and the bad?
Well, so we did issue a State of the Sector report this spring, and, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly. I mean, we looked at the number of students, as I said, in those special populations that charters were serving. We also looked at teacher and principal retention, and the fact is that charters, you know, the ultimate fact is that the outcomes are good for kids. But we also thought it was important to look at the conditions under which charters are achieving those results, the students they're serving, and how replicable the model is. Look, I think charter leaders, and certainly we here at the Charter Center, have a core belief, and that is that to the extent we serve as a model for what public schools can be or should be, the public, policymakers, teachers, principals, parents, everyone, has the right to understand exactly what kind of model we are. And so we absolutely believe that there needs to be greater transparency both on the charter side and the district side. And we're hopeful, and we think that the New York City Department of Ed, you know, believes in that. It's also important that parents be able to compare schools in a world of choice and see how they're doing. So there's got to be a lot more data transparency out there, and we think we're at the forefront of it.
Now, are you satisfied that you have done that? In other words, you're a charter school center, you're proactive and all the rest. Are you satisfied that you haven't, you know, sort of sanitized the report?
We're satisfied that we haven't. I think we did the best job with the data out there. We were careful in the report to note that the data has its limitations as it exists now. And we certainly, I think, in the future will be looking at ways to get more data out there so that we can publicize it. We're limited by what data basically the state and the City Department of Ed produce. Now, what I will say, and I think is hopeful, is that as part of Race to the Top, data transparency was something that the New York State Department of State Ed Department is creating an initiative to do that will provide a much richer data environment for people to be able to see how districts are doing, how schools of ed are doing, how teachers are doing. And we think that's a trend that's very helpful for helping to drive improvement across the state.
Now, we only have 2 minutes, James Merriman, but I wanted to ask you real quickly. The talk around town was that the Board of Regents and the Teachers Union were in cahoots in the beginning to oppose charter schools. We've talked about the unions. Has the State Board of Regents come around to, you think, a more favorable view of charter schools?
Well, you know, a board is made up of members, and I think if you were to ask Chancellor Tisch, she'd tell you that the members have different views, and that's the way it's supposed to be. But overall, I'd say that the Board of Regents understands, and I certainly think Commissioner John King understands, that given, and I say this again and again, given the need, tremendous need, for high-quality seats in New York State, and the fact that we don't have enough of them, I think they understand that charters are one part of the solution to increasing the number of seats, and they support them for that reason.
And you get to talk to Chancellor Tisch from time to time?
Chancellor Tisch, you know, is the kind of person who talks with everybody, and I'm lucky to be able to say that, you know, I get a chance to, you know, talk to her about our issues. She has a, you know, large job with a responsibility for schools across this state, and I think she's doing a tremendous job.
Our guest has been James Merriman, Chief Executive Officer of the New York City Charter Schools Center. Merriman has served in that role since 2007. James Merriman, I always appreciate the fact that you're willing to give us all this time and to keep us informed as to how the charter school movement is going.
Always like being on, Alan. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.